Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Iowa's Politics Look at This Week in the Capitol. And as always, wish I was there. We have the student talks at last Saturday's gun rally at the Capitol. I asked the president of the Wisconsin Hospital Association, how healthy are your hospitals? And we have the former editor of the Cap Times talking about its anniversary. Wish I was there.
You may say that I'm just a child and I do not fully understand my government. You are correct. I am just a child, and I want nothing more than to be hopelessly consumed in my March Madness bracket, not marching for my life. But this is what it takes. I have grown up where children are expected to be more mature than adults. I must be prepared for the very real situations that million kids across the country live in constant fear of, but millions of adults choose to still ignore us. I have been told by adults that they are proud of the youth. But I want to be proud of our adults.
How healthy are Wisconsin hospitals here as we sit here late in March of 2018?
We're pretty good. I think that the coverage expansions have helped minimize uncompensated care. Coverage expansion hasn't, ironically, the growth in Medicaid coverage has actually sort of exacerbated that cost shift from Medicaid in a way. But that's been sort of balanced out by the reductions in uncompensated care because more people have insurance. But I think it's really important, Steve, when we focus, not to just focus on the hospital, because most hospitals in Wisconsin today, in fact, all of them, to some degree, are a component of a larger health system.
Yeah.
And so when we look at the health of a hospital, whether it be good or bad, it really is a component of the larger health system.
Due to the disproportionately higher percentage of low-income students in our district, our cost to provide trauma-informed care and other intensive services also increase at a rate that is disproportionate to other school districts. These same inequities occur with English language students. It costs more to support their language needs, but those services are necessary so that they have the same opportunities to be successful. Providing equal dollar amounts for per student increases in funding does not provide the necessary equity to provide our low-income and EL students the supports necessary for success. I respectfully ask you to look at an equitable per student funding formula that takes the actual costs to educate each student into account, rather than merely funding students with equal dollars as if they all cost the same to educate.
And in 2017, the Glacier's Edge Council serves over 6,000 youth through 2,769 adult volunteer leaders. These youth were members of 255 scouting units throughout South Central Wisconsin. And this past year, 122 young men from my council earned their Eagle Scout honor. 41,000 hours of community service were also reported in 2017 that benefited schools, parks, nonprofit organizations, and cities throughout our council. I'm proud to report that through the service hours, participation numbers, and renovations to camps, it is clear that scouting programs remain strong in Wisconsin and the Glacier's Edge Council.
World War I was on the horizon whenever you quit the State Journal over the fact that the State Journal, which had been a big supporter of Bob LaFollette and the progressive movement in Wisconsin, suddenly turned against him. The paper was founded at a terrible time. The hysteria for the war was intense, and anyone who opposed it was considered to be, un-American, unpatriotic, and again, pro-German. And have you, in the first edition, promised to support the war, but he also promised to expose those who were profiting from the war, which was an incredible stand to take back in those days.
Tuesday election, Supreme Court, J.R. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee County Judge Rebecca Dallet, Sauk County Judge Michael Skronik. The last few days, what do we need to know? What do we need to look for?
What's electoral look like on Tuesday? So a normal spring election, it tends to be a whiter and older electorate than we see in November. So that has tended to favor conservatives, who have won most Supreme Court races the last 15 years, right? The only exceptions are Ann Walsh Bradley and Shirley Abramson. So that's normal. We are not in a normal year, however. So the year we're in right now shows that we see increased enthusiasm among Democrats. But will that translate from that enthusiasm to vote in November to voting in April? This is not, you know, again, a normal election where you see a lot of Democrats going to the polls compared to Republicans. So if the environment that we're seeing nationally carries, that would favor Dalet. The normal environment, the spring election, favors Skrenik. We're seeing a flurry of TV ads from both sides. They are seizing on every little story they can to try and, like, put a ding in the armor of the other candidate to make an issue, to try and get attention. This seems like a base-on-base election right now.
Well, it looks to me like a repeat of Kloppenburg versus Prosser in 2011. And if you look up that number, Kloppenburg got 35% of her votes from two counties, Dane and Milwaukee. So Dalet needs a strong turnout in both those counties. And yet Skronik got a 66,000 margin in Waukesha County.
So the difference, though, 2011 was a referendum on Act 10. We don't really have that right now. We have more of a supercharged atmosphere about Donald Trump, right? So you go back and look, somebody asked me this week, what's a midterm election look like in the era of Trump versus the era of Obama? Midterms in the era of Obama favor Republicans, right? Is this going to be a break with that? Also in 11, we had turnout of 1.5 million people.
1.5, yes.
I don't know we hit 1.5 million on Tuesday. I mean, even the supercharged atmosphere, you're usually getting like less than a million people to vote in a Supreme Court race in April. 2016, it was more than 2 million, but you had presidential primaries on the ballot driving that turnout.
Yeah.
There is no mayoral race in Milwaukee or Green Bay or Madison. There's no big county executive race. There are school referendums.
MPS is out on spring break, excuse me.
They have elections for county board, city, but there's nothing else driving turnout besides this. This is the main vehicle to track people. So who's going to turn out come Tuesday?
Well, I find it interesting. Dalet has said, I've been in a courtroom for 23 years. Skronik worked on GOP causes, Act 10, and the reapportionment maps, and he was appointed by Governor Walker in 15, won his own term in 2016. So you have these two different backgrounds, and Skronik's links to the Republican Party is the reason that your numbers this week was politics numbers 344,000 from GOP groups.
And they expect 400 grand investment by the time it's all said and done. What's interesting is the state GOP is making a pitch, a closing argument about San Francisco values. They are jumping on the comments that Rebecca Dalet made to a San Francisco fundraiser a week and a half ago now that were recorded and kind of spread around here in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It's $200,000 for that ad buy. That's over digital, radio, billboards, and mail. That is not enough money to burn in a message statewide over a week. What it is, though, is a signal to the base of this is somebody you don't want to vote for.
Right.
This is the GOP trying to make a pitch to get their voters engaged and kind of activated to turn out. They don't have the same enthusiasm that Democrats have. That's why they're doing this. Other things to watch. There's no more Charlie Sykes in Milwaukee and talk radio. Now, there are Jay Weber, O'Donnell, you know, Belling, McKenna. Yeah. But Charlie Sykes had a near obsession with Supreme Court races and would bang the drum all the time on that show. You don't have that anymore. I'm not saying that other folks don't reach people, but they don't have the interest that Charlie did. He was a major piece of the turnout game for conservatives. Jerry Bader is not on radio in Green Bay anymore. There's another piece of turnout operation. So for Republicans, they need to figure out a way to get everybody excited to try and match the intensity. If their base turns out, they feel good about their chances, and they're relying on the GOP turnout game. Democrats are the Democratic Party is not doing any kind of contributions to Rebecca Dalet, but it is still testing its ground game. It's still out there, like, making calls to turn people out. Just a different kind of operation. They're trying to turn out Democrats in general, figuring that they will go to the polls. If they get them to the polls, they'll vote for Dalet while they're there.
What about this WMC ad that Dalet only gave 2 years to a grandfather who sexually assaulted grandchildren, mm-hmm. and now the family is saying pull the ad. Are they saying pull the ad because it's working?
Because, the family says it identifies the victims, and that's bringing more pain to them.
Revictimizes the victims.
He brought the 2011 race. In 2011, David Prosser was getting hit by an ad over his handling of sex abuse allegations against a Green Bay priest. Remember this?
Yes.
He was a DA. What turned that ad around was when the Prosser folks got a victim from that case to go on the air and saying this is a bad ad, right? the difference between then and now is you have a family, you know, saying this is a bad ad, but they're not in an ad itself penetrating saying this is a bad ad. If you have that family in an ad, that could neutralize that spot completely. They're just having news coverage of it. So that's a little bit different. You also have Greater Wisconsin up on the air. We have them. They first ran an ad talking about how Skronik was bought and paid for by special interest. They then did an ad that basically hit the WMC spot that this is false, you know, special interest trying to buy a Supreme Court race. And the facts were, here are Skronik's clunker cases. Every judge has a clunker case from approving a plea deal in a sex case, or a sex offender case. They turn it around on Skronik. Now they have an ad they started this week in just the Madison market only about Skronik being arrested and charged in two protest abortion clinics in 1989,
when he was 19 or 20 years old.
Yeah, that ad's only airing in Madison for a reason. That's a key to the base here, right? I mean, Green Bay, much different atmosphere for social conservatives up there than down here, so you're not going to see that ad up in the Green Bay market. With WNC in Greater Wisconsin, one thing I'd asked was, is either one going to, like, will WMC dominate the airwaves in the final 10 days of this race? From what I'm picking up, they're not. I mean, I think there's an edge for the pro-Skronik people between WMC and Skronik, but I'm not picking up that it's like 2-1 or 3-1 where it's just dominating the airwaves. If they're fighting to a draw on the air, then the environment kind of favors Dalit, right? Because we're talking about Dem enthusiasm, but...
It's a turnout race.
And they all are.
I agree, but in 2011, 1.5 million votes cast, took 6 weeks to recount it, mm-hmm. and the margin was 7,000. Let's end this segment this way. Let's listen to Judge Dalit and Judge Skronik at the Milwaukee Bar Association Forum this week.
What we've heard today is a political figure spouting the same tired talking points to appeal to the far right wing and further politicize the judiciary as Scott Walker's rubber stamp. My opponent is bought and paid for by the big moneyed special interests that have had far too much influence on our state's highest court in recent years.
She has spent the last 9 months of this campaign urging citizens all across the state to disrespect our state's highest court. How anybody in this state can think that my opponent could then join that group and be able to work well with them, at least initially, without first repairing a tremendous amount of damage that she has done to their reputation as an institution, and the disparaging remarks she has made directed specifically at a majority of justices on that court.
The other major story in the Capitol, this three-act play. Mm-hmm. So you had groups sue to force a special elections, and the governor and the Department of Justice went 0-3. In the second round, Dane County Judge Nee said, "It is the obligation of this court to enforce the law, and the law right now is that this election shall be held as promptly as possible." And then you quickly had Paul Riley, the chief judge for Court of Appeals District 2, say the same thing. "We also disagree with the governor's assertion that the special elections are an unnecessary waste of taxpayer resources and confusing to voters." Last sentence, "Representative government and the election of our representatives are never, quote, unnecessary, never a waste of taxpayer resources." So the governor went 0-3. No big surprise, because Nee said, "I have to decide this on the current law, not what the legislature may pass."
Yes.
So that was the first act. So talk to me about the first act.
So first act, well, let's go back. The first act is, this is a self-inflicted wound by Governor Walker. Let's be honest. In talking to people this week, I failed to find anybody who told me that the governor needed to have either Keith Ripp or Frank Lissay in an administration job at the end of December. Okay. That there was no reason they couldn't wait until the end of March to hire those guys.
They resigned as of December 29th, excuse me.
So he creates these vacancies end of December. Now, at the time, Governor Walker said no intention of filling these seats is not necessary. They'll be done before we could fill them. Which, common sense, yeah, they were going to be done before. Even if they had, other than this extraordinary session they talked about doing on Wednesday, which they're not going to do anymore, they could have filled those seats most likely until legislature was already done. Common sense. The law and common sense are not one and the same. And so they created this problem by doing it this way. Nobody was going to sue Governor Walker until Eric Holder came in. Then we get the lawsuit that forces the hand. And in talking to people this week on both sides of the aisle, they were fascinated by conservatives talk about, you know, the rule of law, and it's got to be what the law says. DOJ went into the courtroom and tried to argue kind of common sense versus the law. These were not necessary. They made this twisted argument about January 1 of the statute. It doesn't mean January 1 of, like, the first year of the session, but January 1 of, like, the election year. which didn't go well with the judges. And you have not just a Dane County judge, two of them knocking down, but the Second Court of Appeals. They went to the Second District for a reason. That's a conservative court in Waukesha County. So, you know, at some point when they dropped the case and then go to the Supreme Court, somebody told me they must realize this is one too many swords to fall upon in legal arguments to say, you know what, it's maybe time to move on and go to the inevitable, which is calling these special elections.
Which is Act 2. And let's look at that. The governor calls special elections for June 12th. Let's look at the timetable. If you're a candidate now, you can be circulating nomination petitions. Those are due April 17th. If there's a primary, it's May 15th. The general elections in Senate District 1 and Assembly District 2, 42. So candidates are already starting to line up, JR?
Yes. And don't forget this piece of the act. The legislature, for a little bit, was going to try and pass a bill to undercut the court order to order
these special elections. That's Act 3. We'll get to that in a minute.
Well, that kind of gets Act 2 leads to Act 3, though, I think.
I agree.
So they realized at some point that this does not look good, right? Because here you have an environment where everything is about being rigged anymore. I mean, both sides talk about it, the rigged economy, the rigged system.
Yeah.
Here you have Republicans in charge who are going to try and undercut a judicial order and cancel these elections. That would give you another rigged argument to make if you're Democrat against Republicans come this fall. So I get the impression that Fitzgerald, someone realized, I don't have the votes, and my caucus is nervous about this. It's not going to work.
Well, does he not have the votes because Senator Olson, in whose district is Assembly 42, said, look, I can't do this. I'm hearing from constituents in AD 42 that they want a special election?
He's not the only one. There are others who had concerns about this. And then Jim Steinke, the Assembly Majority Leader, said that basically people were unhappy about, you know, this idea of elections being held concurrently. But once you order the elections, it was a bridge too far to go out and cancel them.
Okay.
So now we have these special elections, all right? There's no more impediment to having them. Let's look at the first Senate district first. Both of these seats are Republican-leaning. I mean, they're not like 60% Republican seats, but they're like, you know, low 50s.
A LaSay, Allen and then Frank, has occupied Senate District 1 since 1977.
Yeah.
Can the Democrats win?
Well, yes, if. Here are your ifs. It's not a deep red seat, all right? The first Assembly District, which is the Door County Peninsula, that's kind of a 50-50 seat. We're not talking Waukesha-type conservative. We're talking a little bit more moderate district, all right? You're running in an environment where you're going to have all the most motivated voters turn out. Well, who are those going to be? Well, right now, the environment says Democrats. So if you're talking a June election, who is compelled to go to the polls? That's another thing. But it's not just environment. It's candidate, it's money, it's operation. So who's going to have the money? The committee elect Republican Senate had $1 million in the bank, I think it was, last reporting period that I saw. So they're flush with cash, much more than Senate Democrats have. So will outside groups do? Will they invest in these races ahead of November? Because in the end, if Republicans lose these seats, it is another data point in the idea of a blue wave coming.
Momentum coming, yeah.
If Democrats lose them, it's like, well, they're Republican-leaning seats, you know, maybe they got better choice places to pick things up elsewhere. So we'll see. Candidate-wise, we have a guy who was the head of the Door County Economic Development Corporation, executive director, I think.
He's a Democrat.
Caleb, he's running as a Democrat. They really are happy with his profile. I think he posts his campaign page like, you know, him holding a fish that he caught, you know, Packers sweatshirt, you know, outdoors type guy. Banking background, economic development, this is something who kind of fits the district in their minds.
Democrats have the candidate they want.
Republicans have State Rep Andre Jacques.
Andre Jacques.
And Alex Renard, who was, I think, operations manager of a company that his grandparents founded or something like that up in the Green Bay area. The worry for Republicans is that Andre Jacques is not known as a great fundraiser. He's also very conservative. So in a district that isn't necessarily deep red conservative, how would he fit in a general election, especially a special election environment? Now, Renard, the thing really to watch will be how do Republicans who may not be, fear a jock candidacy, how will they back Renard, right? How's that going to work with outside groups? Now, don't forget that Frank LaSay ran for Congress up in the 8th Congressional District a couple years back, and the idea was, well, he's well-known, he's got the name ID, and he's a proven conservative.
And he lost to Congressman Gallagher.
Because Gallagher in this outsider campaign has a great profile. So Renard may be able to run the outsider campaign and maybe have a you know, that might be his ticket in the primary that way.
Okay,
so
well, let's talk about quickly, Assembly District 42. Keith Ripp got 58% of the vote in 2016. Can the Dems, do they have a shot in the 42nd?
as the one Democrat told me this week, if they win the first, it means everybody's doing well. I mean, like, that's a, the 42nd is more of a swingy district, this guy kind of argued to me, in that it's one that can go back and forth. I think Obama won it in 08, for example, or 12, something like that. Here you have a guy who's a salesman for Kraft, who's announced for Republicans, also owns a chain of karate stores or front shops. You've got a couple things on the Democratic side right now. You have a Lodi alderwoman, Lloyd Graves, who has filed to run. She's somebody I think Democrats want to run.
There may not be a primary there.
Depends. George Farida ran against Rip in 14 and 16 and lost. He had registered to run for the fall election. I talked to him yesterday. He's going to wait and see who else got in before making a decision. There's another young man who's filed to run. I haven't been able to talk to him yet. Not sure what his plans might be. But if you're either side, you would like to avoid the resource drain of a primary. I mean, these are special elections. If you can get your candidate just, this is the guy or gal, and have them go, great. Okay. But we'll see how this all works out.
Okay, now let's go to Act 3. On Wednesday, Senator Fitzgerald appeared before a committee and said, we're still interested in passing the bill that would, we hope, overturn the judge's order, would cancel the requirement that the governor call special elections as soon as possible, and we do it in an extraordinary session the day after the spring election. Now, then that all went away Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So was that just a reflection of the Republicans just saying, okay, let's just hold the elections, no need to do the extraordinary, or did the Senate not have the votes for it?
I don't think they had support to do it, to be honest with you. Now, let's be honest, there are issues with how special elections are run. I mean, they've got a valid point about the window. You know, it's only a four-week one. Should there be deadlines moved? You know, I totally get that. But the law as written wasn't on their side. So they had to do this if they want to change things.
Yeah.
Scott Fitzgerald has been adamant that military votes will be disenfranchised by this window. Mike Haas, who's still legal counsel for the Elections Commission, said, well, no, actually, you can get ballots out and back in about 2 weeks. So you have a four-week window from primary general elections, so they should be okay. So there's that issue. But this is a reflection of the fact that they just didn't have the votes to do this and realize the bad optics of trying to stop elections after they've been called and after several courts have said the law's not on your side.
Yeah, I agree. And you had this fascinating exchange between Senator Mark Miller and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald on some of these very issues. Senator Fitzgerald says we're in a box, but both Senator Miller and Fitzgerald are military veterans, talking about the effect. Let's just go to some of that video from Wednesday's hearing.
It seems to me very transparent that this bill did not become important until after the court told the governor, and as defended by the Department of Justice, that he had to comply with the law, our statutes, and order a special election. Are you not concerned that the statutes, if this bill passes, basically allows an almost indefinite period before a special election is held?
I never in my wildest dreams thought that Eric Holder would come to Wisconsin and sue to make sure that there was a special election that would happen any sooner than nomination papers being circulated April 15th, turn them in on 1 June, primary in August, general in November. But here we are. So that's why I think this bill makes sense, because now we are dealing with what is really a predicament that the legislature finds themselves in. We're in a box. We don't want to disenfranchise any voters. Specifically, probably, I think you can make the case, the most important voters, and that is military.
So I agree with you that not making barriers. However, the typical Senate district has perhaps 100 military voters, but we are disenfranchising the thousands of voters who are without representation. I have here...
And Senator Miller, I don't want to interrupt you, but, I mean, we just lived this. We just lived through this, the 10th Senate seat. I mean, it popped up like that when Senator Harsdorf left. We adhered to the special election statutes. Everything was called and fell into place. And there were zero ballots cast by members of the military. You know why? Because they, first of all, didn't know what was going on. Secondly, they didn't have enough time probably to request a ballot, although I guess they could have done that electronically. And then they would have had to submit that and make sure that it gets in before the end of that time frame. It's just too short a time frame. And that's why Senator Schachner was elected with no military votes at all. That should be a concern to you and everyone else, and a demonstration of this is a problem. This is a problem. And now here we are going 100 miles an hour saying we need this special election today. We can't wait until April 15th. And it just doesn't make any sense to me.
I just wanted to point out to you, in the 24 hours since the substitute amendment was introduced, I've received 271 communications from voters and clerks asking me to vote against the bill. A number of these are from the first Senate district because they do not have a state senator. They are very concerned that they're going to be denied representation, continued denied representation for the entire year of 2018. There will be no representation. They have to write to me.
And it's important to say that exchange occurred on Wednesday before they pulled the plug on the extraordinary session in that bill on Thursday. Okay, JR, stock picks.
Rising. Ryan rumors. So there's been talk for months now about whether Paul Ryan's going to resign. A Nevada congressman went home and told some local publication that the rumor was that Ryan's going to resign in like 30 to 60 days and be replaced by Scalise from Louisiana.
John Boehner says no.
Ryan's people say no, he's not resigning flat out. AP had a story, I think, late yesterday that a person familiar with Ryan's thinking says he's going to file the run soon and will run, but wouldn't say whether he's going to stick around after that. I mean, you know, we're almost April 1, right? Amish papers are taken out April 15th.
April 1, they're due June 1,
I think. Bet around Wisconsin is that Paul Ryan will run for election this fall. Because if he said no now, it would be a devastating moral blow to the caucus of, here's our leader saying it's so bad out there, I'm done. What will be interesting to watch, though, is what happens if Republicans lose a majority.
Yes.
It's been tradition, not kind of written in law or anything, but that if you're Speaker and your party loses a majority, you resign. Also, what if they come back with a smaller majority? Might he walk away then and say, you know what, I did my best, but it's time for me to go somewhere else. So that's more something to watch with Paul Ryan than he's going to resign the next 30 to 60 days.
Rising Paul Ryan rumors. Okay, mixed.
Meteor Timber. So this is the company that wants to do this frac sand operation in western Wisconsin. The DNR granted the company a permit.
Monroe County.
There is a
town of Grant.
There is a lawsuit seeking to undercut that permit. Republicans in the Assembly have tried twice now to add amendments to bills that would basically undercut that appeal process and allow the company to move forward. With the legislature saying we're not coming back on anything except Fitzgerald said maybe on the Kimberly-Clark bill. Otherwise, they're done. By not coming back, that means that bill is dead as well. They attached the amendment, the last version, to a Darling Jobs bill. That means they'll have to rely on the ALJ judge to decide whether that permit should go forward or not.
Administrative law judge.
So it's not the project's not dead, but this easier path to get there has been taken away.
Well, I think with the backdrop of special election, Senate District 1, the Senate isn't coming back. Okay, No. Falling.
Leon Young, so.
Representative Leon Young, the longest serving member of the Assembly, former Milwaukee policeman, go.
He's been pulled off of 3 of his 4 committees.
Yes.
And had his halftime staffer pulled because he says he's being punished by Assembly Dem leadership over his pushing of an amendment during the gun safety debate about banning assault weapons.
Assault weapons.
Now, here's kind of the backstory of this.
But that's a Democratic core issue. Go ahead.
Okay.
Base issue.
The backstory is, though, the team, the caucus, made a decision. Leon, we don't want to do this amendment. And he says he pushed it anyway. Well, when you push it against the team and you put team members in swing districts in bad positions, you have to be punished. I mean, now I'm not advocating this at all, right? I'm just telling you, like, the perspective of leadership in both parties, that if you're going to get out of the minority Democrats, you have to have a more coherent message. You have to work as a team and pull together. When you have people who push against the team, what do you do? Now, I talked to some folks about this kind of heavy-handed. It's also maybe a little symbolic. I mean, basically, they're done, right, anyway. But if you're Gordon Hence, don't you have to take some kind of stance to say this is not acceptable?
But didn't you report that he stood up and challenged it as not germane?
Yes, Hence did.
Leon Young's own leader stood up.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And now, so Gordon does his punishment, and you know, we'll see. You know, does anything carry over to the next session? Okay. That kind of thing. Other Dems have been punished. Dan Reamer was punished over the whole working with Republicans on the campus free speech bill.
Zebnik was exiled.
Yeah, but you have to have team cohesion, right?
Okay.
So this is part of this is total insider baseball. But this is what happens when you go against the team, and you know, Sometimes you get hit.
Okay, we're almost done. Bob Harlow dropped as a Democratic candidate, and JR, the Brewers are in first place.
Remember when you said last week we might have a short show this week because we'll have much going on?
Understand. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm JR Ross.
That's Rewind for March 30.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.